So welcome to Compass Radio here on the Jefferson Exchange, a series about how people in the Rogue Valley try to find a way from mental illness to mental health. This segment is a joint project between JPR and the staff and members of the Compass House in Medford. It's a kind of clubhouse for adults experiencing either mental illness or developmental disabilities. It's a place to hang out, get job training, and connect to services. This month, we look at how money and mental health relate and how people with disabilities make ends meet on very small monthly incomes.
About $100 a month.
$186 a month.
$735 effective January.
Well, right now, I don't have an income.
We're going to hear more from those folks about what living on those amounts means practically. We also have two staffers from the Compass House here with us in the studio. Bryce Harding conducted the pre-recorded interviews we're going to hear. Welcome, Bryce.
Hi.
And Compass House Executive Director Elizabeth Hazelwood is also with us. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, thank you for having us.
Let's go first to a Compass House member. We have Russ in Medford, who recently applied for Social Security Disability Insurance, or SSDI, but he expects it's going to take more than a year for that application to actually result in benefits. In the meantime, he says he lives on about $200 a month, plus about that much in food assistance through the Oregon SNAP program. Here's Russ.
It's amazing because it's like if you really think about a day in the life of somebody with a mental illness who's low income, because not everybody's low income, but if you really think about it, the day of somebody who is low income, the greater portion of the day is just trying to meet the basic needs of housing, food, shelter. You know, I spent the other day, I remember it took me to go to a doctor's appointment, it took me 6 hours to go to the doctor's appointment and back home because I didn't have transportation.
You were working and got a hernia. Workman's comp was denied, and you waited 8 months before you could get your surgery.
Right. And disability or unemployment was denied because they said I abandoned my job because I didn't show up to work. I couldn't lift more than 5 pounds. I wasn't seeing a doctor, so the pain that was generated from the injury, it got so intense that there were times I couldn't even get any place to where I could get food. So there were a lot of days that I went hungry. I shut down. I stopped reaching out to people. Pretty much I figured my life was over. And it made me homeless because I couldn't afford to pay rent. And I finally went to the Mission because it was the only place I could think of to go. But even there, it was kind of hard because they worked with me, but at the same time, they warned me that it was a work mission and that I had to at least do something. So, but they found something, thank goodness, they found something that I could do.
So that's Russ in Medford sharing his experience. Elizabeth Seabury, Executive Director at the Compass House, where Russ is a member, do you have any response to his experience?
It's very normal and very common. And one of the things that he didn't mention is that he fills his days doing shifts to cover and volunteer to work at the Mission. And then as well as doing that, then he has to find a way to feed himself. And if he wants to look for a job and go back to work, he has to fit that in there somewhere too.
Mm-hmm. And Bryce, you conducted that interview. Were you surprised to hear about Russ's experience waiting 8 months for a surgery after an on-the-job injury?
Yeah, I mean, it was surprising to hear that it was taking that long to have a really serious medical problem taken care of. At the same time, I do know that lots of folks living on government assistance, Russ, of course, would probably need a lot of financial help to get the care he needed. And if that was denied, of course, he wouldn't be able to do anything. So it wasn't particularly surprising just because it's an extremely overloaded system. There's a lot of hardworking, good folks trying to help people like Russ out, but they're simply overloaded and they simply can't help everybody when they need.
Well, let's take a closer look at what we heard about that system. And to clarify, many of the members at Compass House rely on Supplemental Security Income, SSI, or Social Security Disability Insurance. And they're both federal programs that provide cash payments to people who meet the federal definition of disabled. Bryce, you spoke with one Compass House member who is disabled, and all of his income comes from Social Security.
With the recent cost of living increase, I went from $733 a month to $735 effective January. Rent is the primary concern, and the lion's share of my monthly income goes to that. I am renting a room in a house with full utilities and facilities provided for $380 a month. Food stamps actually take up the lion's share of the burden on providing for food. But largely, you know, $380 for rent. If you have a cell phone, and that's also accounted in. I'm personally using a pay-as-you-go plan, but that's $50 a month gone there. Then you have your necessary household supplies and things along that nature. So roughly, you can go through that $730 just attending to your basic needs within a few days. Finding housing that I could afford was the initial barrier. And obviously, when you're on a limited income, as I am and many others at a Compass House are, it limits your options. You can't generally pay first, last, and deposit. So what you are left with are conditions that are, shall we say, less than desirable.
That's from a Compass House member in Medford. He's disabled and gets all of his income from Social Security. Elizabeth Seabury, what kinds of undesirable conditions do you see over and over when it comes to the housing options for people with moderate to severe mental illnesses?
That is a huge concern. He pays about 50% of his total income just on housing, and he is actually very fortunate. A lot of our people pay $500 a month.
Yeah, I mean, $380 a month, including bills. I did a double take on that because I can't imagine that amount of rent here in the Rogue Valley. So how you're saying it's very unusual to find affordability like
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
And it's still half of the $730 a month he's living on. He mentioned there, you know, a big barrier is that first, last, and security. Either Bryce or Elizabeth, are there solutions out there for the traditional payment requirements to move into a place?
There are several agencies that will help with deposits, but one of the things is that deposits to move in, we just moved someone in a couple weeks ago, and the deposit alone was $2,500. That wasn't for first and last. That was just a security deposit that goes along with having low income and being a risky renter.
And do you have anything to add in terms of overt or maybe more under the surface discrimination against people with a background of mental health issues?
Absolutely. When people run housing background checks, they look for things like stability in housing, and that's not always possible when you're in and out of the hospital or need different treatments. And then if you have a low income and can't afford your rent, that gives you a bad rental history and a bad credit history sometimes. So finding a place that will even take you with that background is extremely difficult.
If you're just joining us, we're hearing from Elizabeth Hazelwood. She's the executive director of the Compass House in Medford. It's a kind of clubhouse for adults with either mental illnesses or developmental disabilities. Also with us is Bryce Harding from the business unit. He's a co-producer of this segment called Compass Radio. I'm Emily Curitan, and you're welcome to join us. You can join by phone 800-838-3760 or send us an email jx@jeffnet.org. I'd like to go back to Bryce, your conversation with the same Compass House member who preferred not to use his name, who's living on about $730 a month and has so for the last 7 or 8 years. He also gets food stamps in addition to that. And he says he doesn't want to be supported in this way forever, but that in some ways having a job can make it more difficult to save any money.
You are allowed to work a specific, a finite number of hours per month before your benefits get reduced. So in a way, it's kind of impractical. It's slightly better than trying to get out of the welfare trap, but not much. Whatever you do make will be reduced from your incoming benefits. So you're basically going to be working from a zero-sum position. Everything that you make on the outside is just going to go to fill the initial gap created by the loss of benefits. So it's a bit of a vicious circle. You're going to find yourself, you might even find yourself working full time, but still only making the same amount as you made on Social Security and not really being able to move forward.
Wow. So I have a hard time wrapping my head around that, working full time and making less than $730 a month. Does either of you have a response to that?
The way that it works in some situations is that if for every dollar you earn, your supplement gets decreased by 50 cents. Now, if you add into that low-income housing where they take 33% of whatever your income is, then you know, you're looking at 88 cents per dollar made. So by the time you figure that in, and then if you lose your medical coverage, you can actually be down a lot more than you were.
And what about labor issues with people who have developmental disabilities or mental illnesses? And of course, we realize that those are very distinct populations of people. But at the Compass House, you're serving both of them, and there aren't many places like the Compass House. So my original question, though, you know, don't minimum wage laws and labor laws apply to people with disabilities?
They do. But the way that it works is that it's the housing and a lot of your benefits are tied around your income. And they do that so that way they make sure that no one is taking advantage of the system. But what happens is you end up losing more money. A lot of times people's medication is upwards of $2,000 a month. Mm. So if you earn more than that threshold and you lose your medical coverage, then all of a sudden you are faced with those bills or to make the choice of stopping taking medication or stopping working.
Bryce Harding from the Compass House, you have anything to add?
Yeah, well, Elizabeth touched on it pretty well. You do tend to see this problem of people deciding to get back to work and having really great aspirations for how to improve, you know, well, basically most of their life. When you are living with an extremely low income and a mental illness, it's pretty all-consuming. It's what you do with your time is work those systems, try to find out how to make ends meet. And then you see people working to gain an income and a little bit of independence, and you see them fall into these little, not traps, but you see them kind of stumble when costs that they weren't previously responsible for start to pop up that they weren't expecting.
I see. So the road to independence can be a barrier. A lot of barriers pop up along the way. We have input here from another Compass House member who you spoke to, Bryce, who says that when it comes to money, they don't have any control.
Hi, my name's Jared. I live in Medford. I have no control over my money, but I can ask for money and tell them what it's for, and I might be able to get it that way. I mean, if I had the choice to get better and go work a 9-to-5 and get paid that way so I can be in control of my own money, I would definitely do it. That's what I'm working towards right now. I feel sort of handicapped, you know, because I can't, like, go to the movies or anything if I wanted to. Because then that would be spending it outside of the food, rent, and clothing realm.
Jared in Medford there with no money to spare or no access to it. He doesn't really do anything just for fun. I feel like, Bryce, you were just getting at this. You also talked to another member of the Compass House, Linda in Medford, who says that recreation just isn't on the table right now for her because bills and everything else come first. Could you guys talk more about the importance of fun for our mental health?
Absolutely. It's important for anyone to live a balanced life. You have to find a work-life balance. You have to find a home-life balance. You have to have those regular social activities to be part of the community. And when you really want to go, oh, you know, there's this great movie coming out. I really, really want to see it. Oh, but if I do, then I will not be able to eat for the next week. I mean, and those are the choices that are really faced.
And so is that a big problem with the members of the Compass House, people you spend your days with?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I said, living low-income mental illness is pretty all-encompassing. And not having the resources to engage in almost any type of recreation really just kind of highlights that difference for folks a little bit more.
Yeah, I want to drive that point home just a bit. We have more here from yet another Compass House member. Let's hear from Linda in Medford. She says her only source of income right now is in the form of backlog child support payments.
About $100 a month.
So aside from food stamps, $100 a month is the entirety of your income.
Yes. I stretch it as far as I can. See, if I didn't have Section 8, I wouldn't be able to do it.
And Section 8 is?
Housing Authority. They pay majority of my rent. All of it, basically. Just my electricity.
So typically in a month, what does that $100 go towards?
About 30-something on electric, if I have it. And basically cheap toilet paper and laundry. Little bit of laundry soap and shampoo. Before, I didn't have nothing. And then I had to go to St. Vincent de Paul to get help. It's just part of life.
That's Linda. Responses to Linda's experience.
I think if you take a minute and just contemplate what your life would look like with $100 a month, I mean, things that everyone takes for granted, getting into the shower and having shampoo and soap and toiletries. And what if you had to make those choices of what was more important?
And Linda, she also relies on food stamps. How important are food stamps for people with mental disabilities?
They're incredibly important because when given the choices of what you're going to cover and what is most important, oftentimes food is not top on that list, especially if you have a family. Where do you find things that your children need? What often happens is that the parents just don't eat. So the food stamps do ensure that there is money set aside that is only used for food, that the basic needs will be met for families and for individuals.
I want to get one more person's life experience in here. We'll go now to Kim in Medford. She's applying for Social Security disability insurance after over 30 years in the workforce. Last year, she became homeless for the very first time in Medford while dealing with a long list of physical and mental health problems. Here's Kim.
I have 8 herniated discs in my back and permanent nerve damage in my neck, severe carpal tunnel, osteoarthritis, and psoriatic arthritis, along with fibromyalgia. So I deal with chronic pain every day. And I'm not a spring chicken anymore. I waitressed and bartended for 35 years, and my body just doesn't do it anymore. I'm manic depressive. I believe I'm bipolar 1. I don't call it manic depressive anymore. I just found out. I have ADHD, and because I have asthma, I have anxiety when I can't breathe. So it ends me up in the hospital. Even medicated, I still, a couple times a year, just bottom out in a severe depression where I don't want to do anything. I don't want to go anywhere. All I want to do is sleep and cry and not eat. And I'm very suicidal. And that's very frightening because normally I love life and I embrace it each day. And those dark periods are very frightening for me. And it's been really hard the last couple of years to reach out and say, you know, I'm not doing so well. I'm a fixer. I can fix everybody. But my life was a train wreck. It was a mess. But I'm learning to recognize when the darkness is coming and I just hold on for dear life. Last year is the hardest year I've ever had in my life. I've always had a job, sometimes 2 and 3, and I just couldn't pull it together. I was just broken. And so now I'm back out there job hunting. I've started my own business. So I have a purpose again. And that was the changing factor is I just lost all hope. And once I got some hope back, then now I'm in permanent housing. I went from homeless to transitional housing through the Compass House into my own townhouse. But truthfully, being broke and having a roof over your head, it's okay. You know, yeah, you don't get to go buy something you want, but there's a freedom in it.
It's Kim in Medford. It just strikes me to the core there, finding freedom in being broke and having a roof over your head. I think that that and is critical. Elizabeth Seabury, Executive Director of the Compass House in Medford, how do you hook people up with the kinds of housing options that Kim there went from being homeless to transitional housing to now she has her own place?
Yes, Kim is one of the people that went through Compass House's transitional housing. It's a 9 to 12 month program that gets people that are homeless off the streets, gives them a safe environment, and helps transition into permanent housing. There's not enough housing in this area, and we have a huge population of homeless people. And there's just not enough. So these programs are kind of a way to help people find a safe environment where they can then take the time they need to find permanent housing.
And you know, she also goes on to talk about launching a GoFundMe campaign, which I thought was interesting. We didn't hear it in that snippet of the interview, but she asked for financial help. And she said people she hadn't seen in 25 years, friends from high school, loaded it up and took a lot of the pressure off her when she was in her darkest hour. Have you heard of something like that happening with other people?
I'll be honest, I haven't. I thought it was really interesting that Kim did that.
Thinking outside the box is something that is necessary when you don't have means to pay your bills. And when facing a challenge, it's amazing to see how people can figure out how to think around that and how to get their needs met.
Mm. As we go out here, I want to share some other comments we got. These came from Klamath Falls. Julian Klamath Falls sent this in after the first installment of Compass Radio in November when we talked about the stigma around mental illness. She had a critique in that in my community, adults with mental illness widely reject the clubhouse when they find that most of the members are adults with developmental disabilities rather than mental illnesses, and that they find the curriculum geared towards the former to be insulting and marginalizing, that they have different needs. And here's from Kim in Klamath Falls, or sorry, Julian Klamath Falls, as a quote: "As challenging as it has been for Compass House and others to identify and address the needs of adults with mental illness in Medford, I feel it's important for you to acknowledge and inform your listeners of so many other areas within the JPR region that are unable to provide even this basic safety net. I'm a psychiatric provider in Klamath Falls, the most populous area of a very large county that contains not a single inpatient psychiatric facility."
That is challenging, absolutely. And I think that there's a very valid point there, that Clubhouse is a safety net where we do provide non-clinical services and a place where people can kind of get a more well-rounded service. Mm-hmm. And I wish every community had one, and the basic needs as hospitalization.
Well, we'll be hearing more from the Compass House and from adults with mental health issues and developmental disabilities in our region through Compass Radio. It's co-produced by Bryce Harding at the Compass House in Medford. Bryce, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Elizabeth Hazelwood, thank you for coming in again.
Oh, anytime. Thank you for having us.